This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. Our radio show is heard on Pacifica stations nationwide, and you can watch our TV program on Free Speech TV and on our website. The United States has been accused of killing more than 200 civilians in Mosul, Iraq, as a result of airstrikes against the Islamic State. Iraq's Vice President Osama Nujaifi has dubbed the grim death toll a, quote, humanitarian disaster. The U.S. military has admitted that it conducted the airstrikes, but said that they were carried out at the behest of the Iraqi military. There is currently an investigation into what happened. If confirmed, it would be the largest death toll from U.S. strikes in Iraq in years. The Iraq news comes only days after airstrikes by the U.S. were reported to have killed more than 30 civilians in Raqqa province in Syria after hitting a school building there. And there are also reports of the U.S. sharply escalating its involvement in Yemen. My guest is Phyllis Bennis. She is the director of the New Internationalism Project at the Institute for Policy Studies, the author of numerous books, including Understanding ISIS and the New Global War on Terror. Welcome to the program, Phyllis.
Good to be with you, Sonali.
Let's talk about Iraq first. It's not really clear what happened. From what I understand, there was a collapse of a building days after the U.S. actually dropped bombs. What do you understand from the reports that have emerged about what actually happened in Mosul?
Well, as you say, Sonali, we don't have all the details yet. What is clear is that the U.S. coalition, so-called, which basically means U.S. Air Force, drop bombs in Mosul. This has been part of an ongoing escalation in and around Mosul aimed at reclaiming the city from a several-year-long control by ISIS. The air war had been the primary level of escalation in recent days, and actually the last several weeks. And on March 17th, there was a massive attack by U.S. fighter jets. That's what the U.S. has admitted that they did carry out. There are different views. Some are saying that, well, it was U.S. bombing, but the reason it was so terrible in terms of its impact was that it hit a car bomb or other kind of bomb that had been put in place by ISIS, and therefore it's ISIS's fault. There's an effort to deflect responsibility. The bottom line is this is the result of a U.S. airstrike, whether there were some other factors involved or not. One of the issues is that ISIS has been holding civilians as so-called human shields. And the U.S. position seems to be, although they haven't said it this way, but their actions seem to indicate that if there are human shields being held somewhere, it's fine to attack them anyway because it's not our fault. It's a horrific reality. People have now lived for years not only under the brutality of an ISIS-controlled governing strictures, but they now are facing death by U.S. bombs supposedly to liberate them. It brings back, of course, the infamous language from the Vietnam War when a colonel in Vietnam in the city of Ben Tri told an AP reporter, "We had to destroy the village in order to save it." And it became the language to describe the horrific reality of that war. And we're now seeing the exact same thing in a war 50 years later.
And in fact, the United States has been bombing this area, has been bombing Iraq for a number of years, even though there was supposed to be a formal end to the war. In fact, it was simply a continuum, right? A withdrawal of some troops and then with the ISIS threat resurging, there was an increase in troops. It's not necessarily true that President Obama actually ended the war in Iraq.
No, that's absolutely right. He did withdraw the troops in 2011, according to the terms of the agreement that had actually been negotiated by President Bush and the Iraqi parliament much earlier. All the U.S. troops and the Pentagon-paid contractors were withdrawn at that time, but it didn't last for very long. Mm. And the contractors mostly remained because they did a sort of juggling of the books where hundreds and hundreds, perhaps thousands, we really don't know the numbers, of U.S. paid contractors were shifted over from being officially contracted by the Pentagon, and therefore they would have had to leave, to being officially contracted by the State Department, in which case they were allowed to stay. So the contractors remained, and U.S. troops returned about 2 years later. It may have been earlier than that unofficially, but officially they returned about 2 years later. And of course, there have been escalations since. There's now somewhere over 6,000 U.S. troops, as well as several thousand contractors in Iraq, where the war is continuing. The so-called war on terror that we have been waging for more than 15 years now, the war of terror goes on, terrorism is thriving. Clearly, we need a different model, but instead, what we're seeing, as you mentioned, Sonali, is that there are now escalations underway in Yemen, which is also facing a horrific, globally recognized famine, and in Syria, where we now are hearing that there's been a request for 500 more troops to be sent to Syria for the kind of attack on the ISIS-controlled city of Raqqa that we just saw in, and are still seeing right now, in fact, in Mosul, where the danger, of course, is to the civilians that have been forced to live there under ISIS rule, are now facing the possibility of a massive U.S. air war aimed at supposedly liberating them from ISIS rule, meaning that some ISIS fighters may be killed, others will escape, but we know for sure that dozens, hundreds, perhaps thousands of Syrian civilians that are being forced to live in Raqqa will be killed.
And let's talk about what happened in Raqqa. So just a few days before the reports emerged of the more than 200 civilian casualties in Iraq, there were reports of more than 30 civilians being killed in Syria, in Raqqa, in particular when U.S. airstrikes apparently hit a school building. Very little news coverage of this in the U.S. media, by the way. What do we know about this strike? Is it very similar to Iraq in terms of because there was ISIS there, any terrible result that might have come about as a result of U.S. strike is their fault?
Exactly. What we do know is that ISIS does make a military strategy, if you will. It's more than a tactic because we're seeing it all over in areas where they actually control territory and are controlling populations. They do use schools and other protected areas, hospitals as well, as fighting zones. That is a reality. The question is, given that we know that, given that we know which of those schools are being controlled by ISIS for fighting, but are still being used as schools, being used as shelters, what do we do about that? Do we simply say, well, there's ISIS people there, so we're sorry, but we're just going to go in anyway, and it'll be ISIS's fault if there are civilian casualties? That doesn't work. If we claim, as the US does, that we are going to war to liberate people from ISIS, you cannot claim that killing them is the equivalent way of liberating them. You have to figure out a different strategy that does not rely on these air wars, whether it's carried out by drones, whether it's by special forces on the ground, or whether it's by old-fashioned planes dropping bombs.
Meanwhile, all eyes last week were on the attack in London, where a handful of people were killed. All of that was happening at the same time that these things in Iraq, these U.S. airstrikes resulting in mass casualties in Iraq and Syria. And we see so much less news coverage, as well as sympathy and solidarity on social media by ordinary Americans. Meanwhile, it's American responsibility that is leading to these mass casualties in Iraq and Syria. And then here in the United States, many of us sort of wonder, why do they hate us? What's happening there? It's just the connections are just missing. There's just very little coverage.
Many of the connections are missing. And I would say, I think the reason that there is so much of this kind of human solidarity, which is absolutely appropriate in my view and necessary, when you have a situation like that terrible attack in London, the reason that people respond that way, I think, is twofold. One, this is what they're hearing about. This is what's on the front page. This is leading the news. But two, there also is that sense of this could have been me. It partly because this is a Western city. Not everybody who was killed was white. Not everybody was British. It was a pretty international crowd that was on that bridge. The casualties, both the killed and injured, were quite a global bunch, if you will. But it's also the sense that this is a Western city that could have been a city in the United States. It could look like San Bernardino. It could look like the Pulse nightclub in Orlando. So there's understandable reasons why there's that kind of response. But But it comes back to the question of this is what remains on the front page for days at a time. And I think that there is a way in which the wars, the U.S. wars in the Middle East, in Iraq, in Syria, in Libya, throughout the region, in Yemen, have been going on for so long that people have become inured to it. It's not news when there are civilian casualties in Iraq or in Yemen. These are wars that have been going on a long time. The U.S. has been fighting for a long time. There are virtually no U.S. casualties in these wars anymore. Now, that's a good thing, obviously. We don't want young soldiers to be killed either. But the reality is that when they are not, the casualties on, quote, the other side get virtually no attention at all.
What about the any sense of accountability for what's happened in Iraq and Syria? In Iraq, there is an internal investigation, and we've seen a pattern of this over the past decade and a half, right, Phyllis, when the U.S. has been accused of committing civilian casualties in countries like Iraq and Afghanistan. First, it denies it, then it might admit it, and then it does an internal investigation. Maybe many, many months later, it absolves itself. Sometimes it might distribute money to the locals, and then it's over and done with.
Well, you say it exactly right. That's exactly the pattern that we've seen. I think what's also part of that pattern is that sometimes there is an acknowledgement, yes, this happened. Yes, it's unfortunate. We didn't miss our target. This was our target. We didn't have bad intelligence. We knew exactly what was going on there. And yet we had to do it because there were ISIS fighters there. And if you come back and say, but the laws of war require, and in fact, the laws of the United States until recently, we're now hearing, unfortunately, that the Trump administration is actually moving to remove the very insufficient but somewhat restrictive rules that the Obama administration had put in place that said that there could only be a strike, one, if the target was known to be a direct threat to Americans, which is quite a high bar, and two, that there was almost certainty that there would be no civilian casualties. Now, that's a pretty high bar on both counts. It almost never was applied appropriately, but at least that was there on the books. There could be some level of discussion of accountability, at least. Now, the Pentagon is requesting that that set of rules simply be scrapped and that there be no restrictions on the use of force, even when there are these kinds of massive civilian casualties that can be predicted, often are predicted, are known. And then it's later, well, this is just the cost of war, the fog of war. It's not any of those things. This is the inevitable consequence of using massive military force, particularly airstrikes, against a crowded, populated city. And you can talk all you want about what it means to evict ISIS control from the 400,000 people, for instance, that still live in Mosul. But for those people in Mosul, many of them will not survive to cheer the removal of ISIS, because they will be killed by the same bombs that lead to the expulsion of ISIS fighters.
Let's talk about Yemen, Phyllis. Yemen was the country that was the target of the Trump administration's first foray into foreign policy in January. It was a disastrous action that resulted in a botched raid on a compound that ended up killing a couple of U.S. citizens and other civilians as well, including an eight-year-old girl. And the Trump Donald Trump apparently approved that raid over dinner and then dug his heels in and called it a grand success. Now we're seeing the U.S. escalating its involvement in Yemen. This is the poorest country in the Middle East. What is the U.S.'s interest in Yemen? Is it trying to basically use ISIS as a reason to get involved in every country it can?
This one has nothing to do with ISIS. The U.S. is separately going after ISIS in Yemen, and as we see, to disastrous effect, as we saw in this last airstrike that led to killing of at least 30 Yemenis, at least 17 of whom were civilians, including women and children, one of whom was an eight-year-old American citizen, a little girl who was a U.S. citizen. We're not hearing about that part at all. But this is not about ISIS. This is about Iran, ironically enough. This is about the Trump administration trying to make good on their longstanding claim that we are going to go after Iran in a way that the Obama administration never did. The Obama administration was too nice to Iran. We're not going to be nice to Iran. We don't like the deal with Iran, but we can't tear it up, so we're going to make new threats against Iran. I think there are people around Trump who have made clear to him and to General Mattis and others that there is no realistic way of attacking Iran directly without having extraordinarily high consequences directly for the United States. What I think we're going to see here in Yemen, and I've been predicting this for several weeks now, and I think it's coming to fruition, unfortunately, very soon, is the likelihood of a major escalation of the so far Saudi-led war in Yemen, a war against Yemeni rebels known as the Houthis, who have been a longstanding domestic, these are Yemeni rebel fighters who have been against the Yemeni government for a long time. They have been getting a little bit of support, both financial support and some arms, from Iran, something that started only in the last year and a half or so, as Saudi Arabia became very involved in this earlier internal civil war.
And the UAE as well, right?
The UAE is involved as well, but it's primarily the Saudis that are playing a much bigger role. And the role of Iran is very much in response to the Saudi intervention, the Saudi bombing, the Saudi blockade of the port in Yemen, the only port that's capable of getting large ships in. And because the ships can't come in, humanitarian aid, food is not getting in. And as a result, Yemen is now dependent. 80% of Yemenis are now completely dependent on UN food aid just for survival. And 50% of the population is facing what the UN calls severe food insecurity, meaning they don't know where the next day's food will come from. They don't have consistent access to food even for one day. In that context, what we're now hearing is that the US is going to escalate its own role in backing the Saudis. So far, the US has been selling the planes and the bombs to the Saudis, allowing them to go forward with this war. But on the other hand, they have also been participating directly by US pilots flying US Air Force planes that are carrying out in-air refueling of the Saudi bombers so they can be more efficient as they bomb this country to smithereens and kill hundreds, perhaps thousands, of Yemenis. The U.S. now says that they will go beyond just supplying the in-air refueling to play a much bigger role. We don't know exactly what that will look like. Will they say we're still only going against Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, the Al-Qaeda branch in Yemen? Or will they admit that they are now going in to fight against the people of Yemen, as the Saudi Air Force is as well?
Well, finally, Phyllis, Donald Trump made much of the Obama administration's strategy against the Islamic State last year during his presidential campaign and said he had a plan to fight ISIS. Is this what we are seeing? Is this his plan? If so, can you make any sense of it? How is it, you know, very different from Obama? It seems
It's not different at all. What it is a slightly more escalated version of the Obama wars.
It's just more
Obama
aggressive.
Obama was doing the same thing. Obama was also going to war against Yemen, against Syria, against Iraq. There was talk, and there still is talk, about sending U.S. involvement back against Libya, all in the name of fighting terrorism. We have been at war with terrorism for 15 years. Terrorism is thriving. It's the people and the cities of these countries that is being destroyed. And the danger is that now the Trump administration has no faction within it calling for restraint. The Obama administration was divided over these issues. Hillary Clinton and others led a more aggressive interventionist component. There were other forces within the administration, ironically, including at various points the Secretary of Defense. But there were other forces urging caution, urging a pullback. And there was an effort in the White House to balance those competing war strategies. In the Trump administration, at least so far, we see no indication from anyone that there is anyone in the administration or around the administration or with influence in the administration calling for restraint. That's what makes it so much more dangerous right now.
And of course, his constituency is ignoring what he's doing in these other countries. He's called for an increase of 10% to the U.S. military budget. It remains, I think, once more the purview of the progressive media to cover these casualties. Phyllis, I always appreciate your work. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Sonali. It's been a pleasure.
My guest is Phyllis Bennis. She's the director of the New Internationalism Project at the Institute for Policy Studies. She's the author of numerous books, including Understanding ISIS and the New Global War on Terror. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.